The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the century of lies.
Welcome to this edition of Century of Lies. I'm glad to have you with us. You know, the drug war exists through fear. This fear is based on cinematic demons, movie monsters, Dracula with hypodermic syringes for fangs, Frankenstein in a hemp jacket. But our guest today has studied the marijuana myths, and he's determined that there's a great disparity between what has been taught and the actual truth. And I'm proud to have him with us today, Dr. Robert Melamed.
Hi there.
Hello, Dr. Melamed. How are you, sir?
Hey, I'm fine. Good to be back on your show again.
Yes, sir. You, as I told the audience, have studied the properties of marijuana, and it's can be abused, I suppose, but the fact is there are some very positive properties to it. Tell us a bit about what you've determined, sir.
Well, I would certainly say that the benefits far, far outweigh the potential for abuse. You know, it's very sad that the very thought that if we change the way we think at all, that that has to be viewed as something negative in our society today. I mean, if we think about what marijuana really does in our minds, when a person gets high, really what it's doing is it's relaxing them, allowing the free flowing of thoughts. It enhances creativity, enhances sensuality, for be it sex or just, you know, the love of holding your child. How can we make that into something negative?
Yes, why should euphoria be considered a detriment to living? I don't... I don't quite understand that myself. But let's talk about some of the physical determinations you've made. That how these, is it endocannabinoids?
Endocannabinoids, yes.
How they react with systems within our body.
Well, I can give a real summary statement that I find very useful and people understand it. So as we age, we get age-related diseases. And age-related diseases include things like autoimmune disease, cardiovascular disease, cognitive dysfunction, you know, brain deterioration, Alzheimer's, as well as cancer. So these are the age-related diseases. Well, what is it about aging that contributes to the formation of those diseases? And the generally accepted theory is that it's the result of free radicals. And free radicals are very reactive compounds, and that's why we take things like vitamin C and vitamin E to try and help prevent them, things we call antioxidants. But it turns out that these free radicals interfere with our biochemistry, and we can very simply view them kind of as biochemical rust. Essentially, free radicals are harming and deteriorating the quality of our biochemistry. So it turns out that the endocannabinoids, the marijuana-like compounds that we all produce, they really are the oil of life. So the free radicals are the friction of life, and the cannabinoids are the oil of life. And as a result of that, they help prevent the deterioration and the age-related diseases associated with the accumulation of damages from the very fact that we breathe air and burn food.
I don't know, sir. The government authority, the government mandate, if you will, over these drug laws, in particular marijuana, seem to bear no relevance to the truth. The government offices, as best I can understand, at this point, are the only ones proclaiming marijuana such a danger. And we find that the assistant drug czar has been asked to step down by Congressman Souter. We find that the head of the FDA is stepping down because he held on to some tainted science, if you will. Are we beginning to see a sea change? Is this becoming more understood?
Well, sadly, our current government, they don't really tend to believe in science. So whether you're looking at marijuana or global warming or, you know, any number of things, you know, they commissioned a report to be done on the possible consequences of a severe hurricane in New Orleans, and then they ignore the results, and then they lie to the American public and say, well, how could we have ever anticipated that? You know, when they had the studies in their own hands. So lying and a complete disregard for scientific truth seems to be endemic in our government, and even more so with the current the current crew that's in there now.
Yes, sir. There are stories circulating on the internet within publications I've seen that tend to think that marijuana is a cause of psychosis. Your thoughts on that, sir?
Well, it's a complicated issue, I think. I think that our endocannabinoids wind up regulating everything. And as I've said, I think in general they do a lot of good for us. But anything can be out of balance. You know, we have our genetics, our individual genetics determines very much of who we are. That in conjunction, obviously, with our life's experiences. And it's highly likely that some of us may make too many endocannabinoids naturally, and that might have some negative consequences in terms of our thinking. And that it's perhaps possible that some of those people might be pushed over the edge if they consume cannabis. But that is, again, an incredible minority. So what the government does is it focuses on the exceptions, and then out of fear-mongering tries to convince everybody that that's the rule. You know, nothing is all good and nothing is all bad, but cannabis and cannabinoids in general seem to have very important health healthful benefits. So if, you know, and I'm just making this number up, but if, you know, 90 or 95% of us can benefit, why are we making laws that sacrifice the 95% in an alleged attempt to protect, you know, the 5 or 10%? Because I chose that number because about 5 or 10% of the people seem to have problems with marijuana in terms of abusing it to the point that it consumes their lives. But that's certainly not true of the majority. And in terms of schizophrenia, you know, it's about 1% of the population, if I'm remembering my numbers correctly,
yes, sir,
that has schizophrenia, and it's about, I think, maybe 10% of that 1% that might be impacted negatively by cannabis. So we're looking at a very, very small section of the population, and if we were to take a medical approach to drug use as opposed to this idiotic law enforcement approach, we would be able to identify people who were who could be potentially harmed and help them not use it, rather than having everybody live under fear and the assumption that any use is going to result in mental illness. That's ridiculous.
Yes, sir. And as I understand it, I believe this the series of reports, rumors, if you will, began with a study done by a scientist or a physician in Holland, who was later, his reports were issued through the British press and circulated through the U.S. But when he was asked again in a secondary interview, he thought that we should regulate the distribution to adults and then perform an accurate study. He felt that the rumor mongering was wrong.
Well, it's very hard to be accurate when you're dealing with illegal substances, because you're dealing with, you know, are people accurately reporting it? You know, that becomes a consideration. So there are many issues, and when you're dealing with with the mind, which is such a complicated organ, and you're trying to deduce unambiguous cause and effect relationships, it's extremely hard to do, and that's why it requires fairly large studies and carefully done. But just think about the obvious. So, you know, you don't have to be a PhD to put two and two together to get four. How many people have smoked marijuana in America?
100 you know, million?
Are we all schizophrenic because we've used it? No. How many people know somebody even that became mentally ill because they smoked marijuana? You know, compared to the number of people they know who smoke marijuana. So obviously, this is not a dramatic problem.
You speak of, in certain cases, we do have insufficient data to make certain determinations. But in many of those cases, I realize your work is done independent of government oversight, I suppose. But those studies that are conducted with government oversight are never allowed to look for the positives. So your thoughts on that?
Well, what you mean by oversight really is funding.
Yes.
You know, the bulk of scientific research that occurs in this country, especially biomedical research, comes through funding from the National Institute of Health. And when you would apply to a grant for them, you would be applying actually to a subdivision within there, which would be the NIDA, the National Institute of Drug Abuse. And their policy, in conjunction with overall federal policy, is that marijuana is a dangerous, addictive drug with no medical value. So you cannot write a grant to them where you're going to try and show that, for example, marijuana has a benefit for post-traumatic stress disorder because it allows you to sleep and to forget unpleasant memories, things that are scientifically documented. But, you know, you couldn't write that the grant in that way or you wouldn't get it. And that's been my understanding from a number of scientific researchers who've been involved in getting federally funded marijuana funds. So there certainly seems to be science where they're trying to control the outcome. And that's fundamentally not science. That's more politics once again. Science, you know, you let the cards fall where they may, and you don't try to predispose that. But our government is so concerned with creating the reality that they want, you know, that anything else, truth and honesty and justice, fall by the wayside.
Dr. Melamed, this doesn't apply to you, and I know you won't take this wrong, but I want to ask you a question. Those people in authority, be they politicians, doctors, attorneys, district attorneys, that refuse to recognize what I think is very glaring, evident evidence of, you know, that marijuana is not Frankenstein in a hemp coat, you know, that fail to speak up, full knowing, are in fact complicit with the drug traffickers. Your thoughts, sir?
Well, I actually absolutely agree with you. When you say complicit with the drug traffickers, let's look for a moment at the recent absurd government Supreme Court decision, where the federal government is trying to say they have the right to enter into states that have legalized the medical use of marijuana based on interstate commerce. And they refer back to a ruling from the 1940s where the government determined that a wheat farmer had no right to grow wheat for his family because that was going to interfere with the quota system and therefore the prices. So essentially what the federal government has now said with marijuana, as approved by the Supreme Court, is that if we have too much medical marijuana being produced and it enters into the black market, it's going to affect the black market price of marijuana. Well, let's use a little bit of, you know, baby common sense here. If we're getting extra marijuana onto the market, that's going to drive the price down. So essentially the federal government has now decided that what they want to do is protect the black market.
Indeed.
Doesn't that make them guilty of conspiracy?
I think it does, sir. I read part of the proceedings before the Supreme Court, the Raich case, and there was actually a comment made that by the government attorney saying that the Congress has determined that they want prohibition to remain in effect, that they want a black market. And it does sound a whole lot like complicity to me.
Well, again, we have to look at why they might choose that absurd stand. And the answer to me is quite clear in that there are a lot of special interest groups that are getting an awful lot of money. So once you have money flowing, you know, where it's going from our tax money into law enforcement to the tune of, for marijuana alone, it's estimated $9 billion a year, and for the drug war, probably closer to 50, you know, these are absurd quantities of money. So there's a lot of people whose jobs and livelihoods are contingent upon that, and they are politically powerful blocks. And the other end of the story there, I think, is that the pharmaceutical industry, which could lose literally billions and billions of dollars if you think about the medical applications of marijuana. And once again, keep in mind that those medical applications are simply mimicking the way the body works. What better drug could you want than one that really mimics the way the body works and tries to correct imbalances in biochemistry that result in disease?
It's so true, sir. Now, you know, the pharmaceutical companies stand to lose big if, you know, if medical marijuana becomes legal, if, heck, for that matter, if opium became legal. Isn't there a conflict of interest between their authority and their responsibility in this regard?
Well, I think that the biggest conflict is the fact that they own our politicians, because they all donate funds, huge amounts of funds, to both the Democratic and the Republican Party. It's not like they care who gets in, just as long as they can control who gets in.
Well, that isn't that it. I know the drug czar goes around the country saying that marijuana is 10, 20, 30 times more powerful than, mine when I was a kid. And yet, I know there was Thai stick, there was hashish, there was, high-grade marijuana even back then. And doesn't it really mean that you just smoke about a 30th less?
Well, exactly. I mean, that's the absurdity. The biggest consequence, the biggest negative consequence for most people who consume marijuana, if they consume it by smoking it, is the fact that they are putting, nasty compounds into their lungs. I have a paper coming out in a fairly short period of time. It's already been reviewed and approved. That clearly shows why marijuana does not cause lung cancer. But I want to be clear, that's not to say it doesn't cause all sorts of respiratory distress and can contribute to lung-related illnesses. But it does not cause lung cancer, per se. But nevertheless, the biggest problem with smoking marijuana is that you're smoking anything. And obviously, the stronger the pot, the less you're going to smoke, because marijuana is not like cocaine where, give me more, give me more, give me more, give me more. And scientific studies have shown this, both in animals and humans. They like to get to a certain point, which is actually kind of a relatively low level of buzz. They don't want to get overly stoned, which is not to say that sometimes they won't, but that's not the general modus operandi. So if you're going to smoke a little bit and you have good pot versus bad pot, you're going to smoke less if you have good pot, which is intrinsically more healthy for you.
Well, I want to thank you for being with us. We've been talking with Dr. Robert Melamed. He's a professor and head of the biology department at the...
I've retired as head.
Oh, you have?
I've retired as chairman. Now I'm just an associate professor enjoying my life a lot more.
Well, wonderful, sir. Glad to hear that. I appreciate the work you do, and we're glad you were able to join us today. Any closing thoughts, sir?
No, it's my pleasure. Just everybody should educate themselves, because the government is so out of whack here that we cannot allow governments to be so disrespectful of the truth, because whether it be marijuana or any other forms of the truth that they ignore, it's the people that suffer in the end.
Thank you, Dr. Robert Melamed.
My pleasure.
My name is Irvin Rosenfeld, and I'm the longest surviving of the 7 federal medical cannabis patients in the United States.
Well, Irv, that doesn't seem to be a problem with most governmental authorities, yet there seems to be a problem for a regatta you wish to participate in. Tell the folks about that.
It's national. The United States Anti-Doping Association, which is controls the Olympics and all the organized sports, I'm involved in the sailboat race once a year that's in Chicago in the end of July, 1st of August. And they are telling me now that because I'm on a banned substance, medical cannabis, and that they're not going to give me an exemption for that banned substance, that unless U.S. sailing gives me a special exemption, then I will not be allowed to participate in a disabled sailboat race next July.
Well, Irv, because medical marijuana doesn't make you high, doesn't prevent you from operating machinery or driving a car, how can they justify this?
Well, they haven't given any reason to justify it. That's why I'm in the process of writing back the attorney for the United States Anti-Doping Association. He gave 4 criteria where they would grant an exemption, and I seem to meet all those 4 criteria. So it's an ongoing situation, and I'm hoping again that United States Sailing, they're meeting on October the 13th through the 19th, that I'm hoping that they grant me a special exemption so I will be able to go to that sailboat race, but then I'll just take on the United States Anti-Doping Association, because if they're going to give an exemption for amphetamines or morphine, then they should be able to give an exemption for prescribed medical cannabis.
I was on a talk show recently, and the host asked me, said, "What do you think about the dope problem?" And I said, "Definitely, I feel we have too many dopes." Yes. No question about it. That's why we have a drug problem, I really feel, because like everybody has access to drugs, and we're all kind of just dopey, we're just human beings, little protoplasm walking around, shaking hands, "How are you, Phil? Give me a piece of lettuce," No real big thing, we're just kind of dopey folks, and we have all these drugs available to us, that's why there's a drug problem, man. There's all those drug stores, right? Every 3 or 4 blocks, there's a big sign, "Drugs. Open all night, drugs. We deliver, drugs. Cut rate, drugs." It's the biggest thing on their sign. Cosmetics, sundries,
drugs.
And the pharmacist is always stoned. You ever notice that? Check his eyes. He's experimenting with something back there. Huh? How come he can never fill a prescription right away, you know?
George Carlin, he gets it. Everybody gets it, except those whose mortgage payments depend on the drug war lasting forever. Identify this jurisdiction by its drug laws. This nation once had hardcore drug laws that included the death penalty. Currently, this pariah nation sees the benefits of harm reduction. Formerly proclaiming zero tolerance like their American counterparts, they now take a pragmatic approach to all drugs. This nation's drug czar has embraced drug treatment, subsidized needle exchange, and methadone centers. They say opium is a blessing and heroin a modern curse in Iran. A grand jury in Travis County, Texas, recently handed down an indictment to a U.S. congressman from Sugar Land, Mr. Tom DeLay.
Just another day at the office. In an act of blatant political partisanship, a rogue district attorney in Travis County, Texas, named Ronnie Earl, charged me with one count of criminal conspiracy. This is one of the weakest, most baseless indictments in American history. It's a sham, and Mr. Earl knows it. This act is the product of a coordinated, premeditated campaign of political retribution, the all-too-predictable result of a vengeful investigation led by a partisan fanatic.
If convicted of the charges against him, Congressman DeLay faces up to 2 years in prison and a $10,000 fine for the crime of trying to take over the political process and changing the power structure of this nation. Were the congressman to have been a doctor who prescribed one too many pain pills to a sick or dying patient, he could face 10 years to life.
I'm Dr. Frank Fisher from California. I'm a general practitioner with an area of expertise in the management of chronic pain with opioid analgesics.
Dr. Fisher, I keep seeing newspaper stories and hearing about more doctors being taken further into the judicial process. So tell us what's going on, the DEA versus pain doctors these days.
Well, there was a recent presentation at the Cato Institute just a couple of weeks ago. I spoke on a panel along with an academic physician and a professor of political science from Florida, and Siobhan Reynolds, who's the head of PRN and the only effective activist on this issue in the country. And Linda Pei was there, who is the wife of a pain patient in a wheelchair who is doing 25 years in Florida State Prison over half a gram of oxycodone, which he needed for his pain. And Drew Edmondson, the Attorney General of Oklahoma, was there. The panelists were all calling for an end to the DEA's involvement in the regulation of the practice of medicine. Mr. Edmondson said that when he's lying on his deathbed in agony, the last thing he wants is to look up and see a DEA agent standing between him and his physician. So the attorneys general of the United States, of the various states, 36 of them have written a letter to the DEA complaining about them pulling back the guidelines that they put together with the academics. So it's interesting how this is turning into a states' rights issue. And law enforcement is actually on the side of the patient against the DEA.
Well, sir, it makes you wonder just who's in power. I mean, we learned from FEMA that sometimes it's cronies rather than responsible individuals in control. What do you think, sir? Are we going to see a shakeup more within the FDA and the ONDCP?
The way we're looking at the situation right now, is the Controlled Substances Act and the federal regulation of the practice of pain management is effectively preventing the people with the malignant form of the disease we call chronic pain from getting the treatment they need. It's kind of like the situation with FEMA, where the federal government isn't able to respond effectively to the situation. In fact, they seem to be making this one a whole lot worse.
Approximate for us how many pain patients there might be in America.
The estimates run anywhere from 30 million to 70 million, but there's a population that we're particularly concerned about because they suffer from severe chronic pain and they can't work and it interferes with their social lives. And the cornerstone of treatment for that population is opioids, and usually in what's considered fairly high dosages, and those people just can't get them because the doctors are afraid to prescribe. Now, what I did at the Cato presentation, which is available in a webcast at the Cato Institute, is I pointed out that the academic physicians have substituted this system of aberrant drug-related behaviors. They look at things patients do, like ask for more pills because they're undertreated, and they say, oh, you might be getting addicted. I think we're going to have to cut you off. So instead of titrating these patients up, raising their dose to where they can function normally, they're using this voodoo and saying, oh, I don't think I can treat you. You might be getting addicted because you're acting like a normal patient. It's a catch-22 for the patients, and it's a systematic form of human rights abuses that's actually being perpetrated by the medical profession, which should have the best interests of these patients at heart, and in fact is delivering a quality of care that can only be characterized as malignant neglect.
Dr. Fisher, I see reports that worldwide there is a short supply of opioid medicines. I also hear that the U.S. spent $780 million in their futile effort to stop the opium growth in Afghanistan. And I also heard that for $600 million, we could have bought the whole crop and avoided the whole war.
Not only could we have bought the whole crop, but it's our understanding that most third world countries don't have any morphine at all. And all of that crop could have been turned into morphine to treat people with chronic pain and those dying of cancer. So the suffering that's been caused by this exportation of the war on drugs from the United States is just unimaginable and unconscionable once one starts to get one's mind around it.
It is an insane policy, isn't it, my friends, that sick and dying people are denied medicine for fear that doctors will go to prison, that, you know, some little Johnny will get some drugs when, good God, he can pick up the phone and get it delivered in an hour. We all know that. It's time for it to end. It's time for you to stand up and help do your part. Contact your congressman. Contact your local officials. Let them know that you see the truth and that it's time for a change.
I want to remind you good folks out there listening that you can hear judges, congressmen, scientists, doctors, lawyers, people from all over the planet claiming we need to end the drug war at our website, drugtruth.net.
You know, it's really up to you. That's why we produce these shows. That's why I bring these doctors and scientists on. And as always, the drug warriors refuse to come on the program. They won't. They just won't do it. You know, there's no truth, justice, logic, scientific fact, moral clarity, no medical data, no science, no reason whatsoever for the drug war to continue another second. The drug lords run both sides of this equation. We have, in fact, been duped. So please do your part to end this 90-year-old war on ourselves. Prohibido istak ivalesko.
For the Drug Truth Network, this is Dean Becker asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the century of lies. The show produced at the Pacifica Studios of KPFT, Houston. Our engineer, Philip Duffy.